This is the BC members call on the 4th of January, 2018. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn it over to Claudia Selle. Please begin.
So thank you very much, Claudia Selle, for the record. First of all, I wanted to wish everybody a very happy new year and also to thank everybody for the opportunity you're giving me to be your chair. And, you know, so I'm thrilled to engage more with the BC. And, of course, please don't hesitate to reach out to me as I'm also learning through this process. I'm very open, so if you have ideas or anything that you want to convey to me, please do so. For today, we have a quite long agenda, so there will be a quite long policy calendar with Steve, about 20 minutes. Then the council update with Susan Kawaguchi, the CSG report. I'm not sure Barbara is on the call. I think she couldn't join, so I don't know whether we are having this update or probably not. And then Jimson will go on with the finance report, and then under the AOB we can take further points that needs to be maybe the group to be updated. We'll see if we have enough time. I also wanted to thank very much the outgoing ExCom and particularly Andrew for chairing this last year. He has been doing a great, great job. And I wanted to welcome the new ExCom and you know all of them already. So happy to engage with you all. I will leave the floor to Steve as we have a quite long policy calendar.
Thank you, Claudia. Andrea has put the policy calendar up, and I emailed it out 2 days ago. If any member of the BC needs a copy, please let me know, and I'll send it along. I can skip the channel, the first part of comments already posted. We haven't posted anything since our last call. Let me dive into the six current open public comment periods, all of which will terminate prior to our next BC call. The first one is closing on January the 8th in just 4 days. This is on recommendations that have been updated from the Competition Consumer Trust and Consumer Choice Review Team. We always abbreviate that as the CCTRT. Waudo Siganga is a BC member who's on that team. Waudo's not on the call today, but has been very helpful on it. This is a particular review where we've commented twice. It's a review that's driven by the ICANN bylaws, because we brought it into the bylaws from the affirmation of commitments. It's a community-driven review on whether the most recent round of expansion of new GTLDs contributed to competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice. And it will inform the next round or the opening of an infinite round of new GTLDs in the future. This particular comment is on a supplement to the recommendations of the review team, and that supplement was driven entirely by a recent report on the statistical analysis of DNS abuse that occurs in GTLDs. And BC did comment on the report in September, and then we are having an opportunity now to see whether the review team adequately reflected all of those suggestions. I want to thank Marie Petullo for stepping up and drafting the BC comment. I then provided edits in a particular area that I wanted to bring to everyone's attention because we're about to submit this comment. It has to do with the recommendations of the review team to tie GTLD fee reductions to measures they're taking to reduce DNS abuse. In general, the BC loves the idea of giving incentives to reduce DNS abuse, effective incentives. On the other hand, we had a very bad experience in the past 12 months where the Global Domains Division undertakes to negotiate fee reductions with GTLDs without direct community input. They treat them as bilateral negotiations between ICANN and the contract party, the registry, and there isn't adequate reflection of the community's priorities, that is to say our priorities, in getting that done. So the last thing I think we wanted to do was to simply turn GDD loose to go negotiate fee reductions with registry operators who would promise probably anything to get a reduction in their fees, and speaking mostly of the smaller new GTLDs that are struggling financially. So the way in which we modified the comment on recommendations A and B was to suggest that there would need to be a process whereby GDD was informed and got community input on the pros and cons, the ups and downs of negotiating specific DNS abuse reduction measures by registrars and registries. So we still endorse the concept, but as far as the process, we want the community be involved instead of leaving it entirely to the negotiators at ICANN and the registries themselves. So I'll stop there. Marie, is there anything you'd like to add about this comment where you did most of the drafting? Okay, thank you, Marie. Any comments from the rest of the BC members? This is due in 4 days. This is your chance to weigh in. It's the first attachment to the policy calendar. All right, thanks all. Let me turn to the second one. Numbers 2, 3, 4, and 5 on the policy calendar for today, 2, 3, 4, and 5, are all related to work stream 2 of the IANA transition. This is because when the transition of IANA from the U.S. government to ICANN occurred, it created an opportunity for us to achieve accountability reforms at ICANN that we've never had before. And we did those in two phases, work stream 1 and work stream 2. You're all familiar with Workstream 1, which concluded last October of 2016. Workstream 2 is nearing completion, and that is why you have to help me review several of the Workstream 2 projects. There are 9 in total. You have 4 of them in front of you today for comments that are due on January the 14th. BC members have been active on many of these, and we have a very substantive comment on each. The first is the comment on enhancing ICANN's accountability through its diversity. And that's the diversity of representation in the ICANN community. And we thank Marilyn Cade for drafting the comment. And Jimson provided some superb edits. And that is attachment number 2 to the policy calendar. This will be due on the 14th of January. You don't have to give me all your comments now, but if anyone has any input, this would be a great time to share. I'll put out a last call 3 or 4 days before those close. Any other comments there? Thank you. The next one is number 3. It's recommendations to improve the Office of the Ombudsman. And these recommendations have several common sense aspects to them. But Jimson, who drafted our comment, Jimson and I were very concerned that it sort of opened the door for ICANN to dramatically expand the Office of the Ombudsman so that it would have multiple staffers involved. We're not objecting to that per se, but there ought to be a justification to suggest that the workload of the ICANN Ombudsman exceeds the capacity of the Ombudsman to get the work done, and only then would it be necessary to expand it. Jimson, is there anything you'd like to add on the draft that you've helped to circulate? It's the third attachment.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments on the Ombudsman function? Great. The next one, number 4, is recommendations on how to improve ICANN's staff accountability. So staff accountability, as distinct from ICANN board or community accountability, this was a Workstream 2 item that actually doesn't have too much specific recommendations that need a lot of attention, but I want to be very grateful to Stephanie Ducheneau of Google for drafting a BC comment that we circulated back on January 1st. Both in Google Doc and MS Word. So we are generally endorsing the recommendations that are coming out of Workstream 2 with respect to staff accountability. If any of you have prior experience as ICANN staff, and I'm thinking of Denise and Margie in particular, I would be so grateful if you could just spend 10 minutes reviewing attachment number 4 and let us know from the perspective of former ICANN staffers whether there's anything else you think we ought to add to it. Marie, I'm looking at your comment in the chat. So you're suggesting that with respect to the diversity, I'm going to ask you to circulate a comment via email on that to all of us so that we and the drafters of the diversity comment, which include Marilyn and Jimson, and Marilyn's not on the call. So I want to be sure. Oh, there she is. Yeah, Marilyn is now on the call. So, Marie, if you wouldn't mind, please circulate that as a it's a written comment and we can all reply. The sooner the better, since that diversity comment closes the 14th. Thanks, Marie. All right, so back to this one. If former staffers like Denise and Margie could please give a quick look to the fourth attachment on staff accountability to see if we're on the right track. Appreciate that. Thank you, Margie. The fifth one is recommendations on ICANN's jurisdiction. This was one of the most controversial Workstream 2 projects because it addressed certain Workstream 2 items on the legal jurisdiction of ICANN's activities. It was full of attorneys, experienced lawyers, as well as policy advocates, and included a number of GAC members who had varying opinions about how to affect ICANN's jurisdiction. The most controversial point of that was somehow extracting ICANN from the jurisdiction of any government. It was initially the jurisdiction group was asked to consider moving ICANN to a completely independent, non-jurisdictional venue, changing its form of incorporation so that no country would have jurisdiction. There were a number of attorneys on that call who popped that balloon as illusory from the very beginning. They suggested that whenever ICANN does activities that affect the citizens or businesses of a particular nation, that nation will assert jurisdiction. And if it has any ability to reach ICANN, it will enforce its laws and regulations to protect its citizens and businesses. And if ICANN is involved in those activities, then ICANN is subject to that jurisdiction. So I think that set aside this vague notion of a global immunity. Nonetheless, Brazil and India were keen to say, let's come up with some specific kind of immunity so that while ICANN might remain a nonprofit California corporation, it still should be given blanket immunity from United States law because Los Angeles, California happens to be in the United States. We went back and forth on this, and I have to suggest that the final recommendations, I believe, deserve our support. The final recommendations suggest that trying to achieve immunities for ICANN from other governments was unrealistic and outside the scope of what Workstream 2 was supposed to look at. And to do that, they referred back to the ICANN bylaws that we adopted after Workstream 1 that laid out what this Workstream was supposed to look at. The recommendations we end up with, this is a very long report because it contains all of the details, but the recommendations are very brief. There's a handful of measures where ICANN has to step up its efforts to get relief from government sanctions that could affect ICANN's ability to bring global participants into a given country to attend an ICANN meeting. So, for instance, if you had European Union sanctions against residents or citizens of a certain nation, that we wanted to be sure those citizens could still travel to the ICANN meeting. If the United States was hosting a meeting, or the United States, in the case of ICANN, imposing sanctions on certain nations, we wanted to be sure that businesses and individuals in those nations could still obtain contracts with ICANN. I'm speaking here of contracts to be registrars or registries, especially in the new GTLD program. So the recommendations in this report require ICANN to increase its efforts to obtain explicit sanctions relief so that individuals can participate in ICANN processes and sign contracts from ICANN, regardless of the country they're from. So we fully supported those. I drafted the original and got a lot of help from Claudia Selle on the comment, which is the fifth attachment. And a second area of recommendations had to do with the choice of law. And on that, the team came up with four or five recommendations to try to suggest that how registrars and registries would choose the venue of legal jurisdiction to do arbitration or challenges to their contract interpretation. The recommendation Claudia and I came up with was to stick to the status quo with regard to registry and registrar contracts. That was one of the options presented, and it's the one that we favored in that report. There is one point of controversy, I would say point of difference, I wouldn't call it controversy, but both Claudia and I are wondering how explicit we want to be at pushing back on the most significant minority report, which was submitted by the government of Brazil. What the government of Brazil is recommending, I'm going to paste it into the chat so you all have a chance to see it. I've just pasted into the chat what Brazil's recommendation is, that ICANN should develop accountability mechanisms that are not subject to the jurisdiction of any government. And then they go on to say, though appropriate, multi-stakeholder policy development processes to ensure that ICANN can be held liable for its activities that are immune from U.S. jurisdiction. But unless somebody can explain it to me, I maintain this doesn't have any coherence at all, and I would prefer that we gently and respectfully push back on the Brazil suggestion in its minority report. It has attracted a lot of attention, and if we leave it unsaid, it will continue to persist as this Workstream 2 group works towards its final recommendations. Andre, if you don't mind bringing up the PDF. Speaking of attachment number 5, for those of you for whom it is easier to simply retrieve it. And Marilyn, I'll call you in just a moment, please. I wanted to bring up the section that Marilyn and I had been discussing. Andrea, I'm unable to scroll that. Are you able to help me to do that? I wanted to scroll that document.
Yes, just give me a moment.
And Marilyn had made 2 points. One is in the chat where she says, on a matter of principle, don't object to a minority report. I'd like to explain why I don't think that should be a rule we follow. If the minority report is gathering significant attention from a minority of participants, the minority report will persist and will be surfaced again as it goes to review by all of the chartering organizations. Another comment Marilyn said is not to call out Brazil specifically, but we all know exactly whose comment this is. So on the screen in front of you, you have the way in which I have drafted the comment. I say, with all respect for the government of Brazil, we therefore do not agree with its contention that the draft report falls short of its objective and vision in particular. In the BC's view, the draft report meets the objectives set forth for the Workstream 2 project in the Workstream 1 Accountability Final Report. So I have respectfully but explicitly called that out because I think it's important to suggest that we believe that this jurisdiction group stayed within the guardrails of what the bylaws said they were supposed to do, and that we don't have to expand its scope to address what is arguably an incoherent recommendation from the government of Brazil. So I'd like to take a cue on this. We can burn 5 minutes on it. We'll start with Marilyn. Marilyn, can't hear you.
Actually, why don't you start with Mark and others? I've already expressed my view, and then I'll come back.
Thank you, Marilyn. Does anyone else have any views they wanted to express on the text that is on the screen? Mark is adding that the Brazilian GAC comments were done without consulting with the local community of stakeholder groups in Brazil, including the business community. Thank you for that, Mark. The other comments that I see agree with my contention that Brazil's suggestion is unworkable and that agreeing with the recommendation here. Marilyn, back to you.
Thanks. I just wanted everybody else to be able to comment. I don't think it's necessary for us to single out a government, and I'm going to comment that so, Mark, I'm listening to you, but I'm also reading the comments from more than one national government in Brazil that has taken a view in support of the national government. So it's very, very complicated. It would be like in the U.S., we would have 3 states saying one thing and the federal, and the Department of State or Department of Commerce saying something else. But I think the big deal for me is we should not be singling out a government. We should allow minority reports and listen to them. And we should deal with whether or not we have unanimous or rough consensus from the BC on our position. So we don't single out a government. Instead, we focus on what the BC's views are.
Thank you, Marilyn. Jimson.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. I think basically when you encourage immunity, it will breed impunity. And as business people, we don't want that kind of scenario. But more specifically, with regard to whether we should comment about them, the minority report, I think we should focus more on support for the majority report, and let's comment on the minority report be kind of a footnote. Thank you.
Thank you, Jimson. I will note that there is exactly one sentence regarding the minority report of Brazil. So there is more focus on the actual majority report and only a single sentence, which is on the screen in front of you, with regard to Brazil. I want to remind you why addressing Brazil is so important. There are five chartering organizations for the Workstream 1 and Workstream 2. One of them is the GAC. The GAC's recommendation on whether to approve this will hinge upon the GAC's ability to achieve consensus. At this point, Brazil is claiming, I'm going to paste into the chat Brazil's statement from their minority statement. They say that due to the draft report's failure to address the concerns that Brazil has laid out about on immunities, that Brazil cannot support the draft report. So you can see now why it is. I believe it's essential for us to respectfully but specifically try to show that Brazil does not have the support of the broader community in its objection, because there's a chance that Brazil would carry their objection to try to block the GAC from approving the Workstream 2 report on jurisdiction. And that would mean we don't get the other reforms in jurisdiction regarding sanctions. And thank you, Ben Wallace, for coming into that. Ben, I wonder how to do that. I am open to suggestions. We have 10 days before this report is due. I am open to suggestions for how to suggest it without specifically naming Brazil. You could just suggest one of the minority reports from a government, and then the footnote, because I want to be accurate here, the footnote could refer to Brazil. Perhaps that's a compromise that you would like better. I can take the word Brazil out of the text on page 2 and merely refer to it generically as a government. And it is exactly our position to both examine the main part of the report as well as any minority reports. I can guarantee that there are some groups who will comment on this, and they will call out the minority report as deserving of support. And if they do, and there's no other comments against the minority report, it ends up being pulled into the main report. Things like that can happen. Anyone else in the queue? Okay, so it looks like so far most of you are saying try to move the word Brazil only to the footnote and remove the word Brazil from the text on page 2. Any Marilyn, noting your objection to that as well. Anyone else agree with Marilyn? Great. Thank you all. Appreciate that. There's one more open public comment, which is due on the 15th of January. Not related to Workstream 2, but it has to do with the operating standards that ICANN staff is recommending for the specific reviews that ICANN does. Let me shout a big thank you to Faisal Shah, Susan Kawaguchi, and Marilyn Cade. You guys have done a great job on a draft comment that was circulated to the BC, and you are going to hold a call tomorrow to discuss further edits to the draft. Lawrence, I believe you just noted a comment in the email list as well. So would you any of the folks on that group, let me ask you this, if you don't mind, would you invite the rest of the BC to join tomorrow's call, just in case others want to chime in on that? There are many BC members that have participated in the reviews and are in reviews right now, so it'd be great to do that. So Faisal, if you don't mind, send that to everybody. And I look forward to being on that call tomorrow to discuss that report. The only other one is due the 1st of February, which is proposed changes to the ICANN meetings strategy. I noted for all of you that ICANN is making two changes. They suggest that they want to add an additional day to the mid-year meeting, the ICANN second meeting, the policy forum. And for the annual general meeting, they want to do either one of two things, either reorganize the work so that the time on day 7 is better used, or reduce the meeting to just 6 days and leaving meeting 7 day available in case members of the community wanted to hold their own internal working meetings or wrap-ups. So we have over a, we have about a month to determine what to do on that, and we'll figure out then what to do. I would love to have a volunteer from the BC to draft BC comments on this new meeting strategy. This one doesn't involve any policy. It has to do with the convenience and priorities of the BC for ICANN meeting organization. Hey, Marilyn, thank you very much. Marilyn volunteered for that. Anyone else? Right, you do need colleagues. So Marilyn and Claudia, that would be a great team. Thank you very much. The next section on this policy calendar, thanks for putting it back up, Andrea, is the sort of the historical track on GDPR and who is. And I wanted to call to your attention that there have been a few updates since then. We sent a letter to the ICANN chair on December the 8th, expressing a lot of concern about how they relaxed the WHOIS compliance without following the process for trying to conform WHOIS to national laws. ICANN has not replied to our letter, which is, I found surprising. It was posted, but ICANN has not replied. And finally, ICANN has posted on December the 18th the latest responses from the Hamilton Law Firm. So the Hamilton Law Firm took all of the comments and questions that were put in, and the BC's questions are addressed on pages 14, 15, and 16 of the Hamilton reply. I want to note that the BC has an opportunity to react to the Hamilton Law Firm's answers. I have to figure out what the deadline for that is because it's not on an official public comment, but I believe ICANN is looking for responses as soon as possible as to whether we want to probe deeper into what Hamilton's answers are. When we put together the questions for Hamilton, there were several BC members who were superbly helpful on that. I'm speaking of Tim Chen, Jay Sadowski, Marilyn Cade, and Margie Milam. If you could please just look at those two pages of Hamilton responses, because if they dodged our question or their answers suggest another question, this is a great opportunity for us to fire back follow-up questions to Hamilton. So Jay, Tim, Marilyn, and Margie, if you don't mind taking a look at that, I'd appreciate it in the next few days. Marilyn, your hand is up. Thank you, Tim. If you take a look at that, I'd appreciate it. Meanwhile, Tim, I will check on the deadline because it may be that ICANN is looking for a quick response on this. And Marilyn, thank you as well. All right, that's all I had for the policy calendar. So let's, and Margie, if you're able to look at that as well, I'd appreciate it. That's all I have for the policy calendar. So I'd like to turn things over to Marie Petullo, our newest BC counselor, and Susan Kawaguchi. There wasn't a lot of activity on council since our last call, but I'll let you lead us through it. Susan and Marie.
Thanks, Steve. This is Susan Kawaguchi. It was an easier meeting, and I want to welcome Marie to the council. I'm sure she and I are going to work great together, and so I was happy to have her. But I also want to thank you, Steve, for filling in the meeting before, because that was very beneficial to the BC also. We had pretty light agenda, mostly discussions. We had one motion to vote on, which was the we approved the charter on a standing budget committee for the GNSO Council. So this committee will be a subset of the council that will draft a review the budget, ICANN budget, and draft comments for the GNSO Council and try to correlate with all of the SOs and AC or the S's and C's in the GNSO. The only other thing that I really wanted to note was, and I thank you again, Steve, for working with Keith Drasek on drafting a letter to the SOs and ACs concerning the SSR2 suspension. And there is a draft that I made a couple edits to, but really Steve and Keith drafted. And that's gone out to the full GNSO Council for review and hopefully will be sent to the SOs and ACs soon, urging the SSR2 be put back to work and unsuspended, or whatever the term we're using now, and that the GNSO Council is actively working on replacing one of our the GNSO nominated candidates that had to resign due to work responsibilities. So we are moving forward. We're urging the whole community to put this behind us and get the SSR2 back to work. Other than that, we haven't seen the agenda for next meeting yet, but I'm sure it'll be a full agenda.
Susan, hey, it's Steve. Let me add that the GNSO is taking lead at suggesting that it will meet with members of the SSR2 team to figure out their recommendations for getting extra skill sets in there and revising the scope of work, and that the GNSO will, by the end of January, I believe, make recommendations to the other ACSO leaders. Is that still the plan?
That is still the plan.
And honestly, Denise, you're going to be a key to that entire process. So if you don't already have it, Denise, perhaps we could share a draft of that letter with you so that you know what's coming. Susan, what do you think of that?
Yeah, I'll send that over.
Marie, anything to add on council? Okay, thank you, Marie. Claudia, we're going to hand it back to you in just a moment. Channel 3 on here is the CSG coordination. Barbara Warner has just been reelected as our liaison to the CSG. Barbara's on leave and not on today's call. And there's only two items on the policy calendar regarding CSG. The first is we have an intersessional coming up, and Barbara's our lead coordinator on that. This will occur in Los Angeles on February 1 and 2. Your executive committee members will all be attending. And attached as attachment 7, the latest agenda and sessions that will be available. And per request from Marilyn, anyone will be able to monitor remotely and be able to participate via chat, but not via voice communications. Okay, back to you, Claudia.
Thank you, Steve. And I believe we can give the floor to Jimson for the operation and finance report.
Thank you very much, Claudia. This is Jason Lucy. Let me begin by thanking our electoral officer, Glenn, and Andrea for the support we received for the success of this election. You can recall we set the policy to have our election around October, November, and over time, about 3 years now, I think that's worked pretty well. And also to thank our past ESCOM members. Thank you very much, Andrew. And also, we also thank Phil for his active role in the ESCOM. And also to welcome the new members in the executive committee. So, and thank you in advance for the spirit of cooperation going forward. Talking about new members, there are the number of new members coming in through a number of outreaches we did, like the recent IGF hub that took place in Abuja, hosted by Lawrence and team. And also past outreach events like Africa Summit. But I would like to use the opportunity to request the outreach committee to look at the need for us to have a new members kit. Though well, we have situations whereby our secretariat gives information to new members, but I think we need to have a new members kit that will enable new members to get across, especially up to date with the number of policy positions in the DC. Next, I would like to talk about the crop Well, I mentioned this at the last meeting. CROP is Community Regional Outreach Program. It's a program facilitated by ICANN to support our outreach efforts. Though we have some interest expressed to use CROP, in-region CROP, we have four in-region CROP to attend events, outreach events in a beneficiary's region. Then one opportunity or one facility of CROP to conduct outreach outside the beneficiary's region. So we've received some interest, expression of interest to use this, that is at the outreach committee. And this also to remind members, as many that would like to use this facility to conduct outreach. So outreach can be done at with the ICANN meeting, it could be at major business meeting, event, but application has to be made to the outreach committee, providing justification as well with a plan, an outreach plan. Okay, then since ICANN 61 is coming up steadily, we're starting the process of publishing a latest newsletter. I would like to use the opportunity to encourage all members, as many that would like to put something out, informative article, please begin to pen it and send it to me. Normally, the executive committee members, like the chair, our policy chief, and our counselors, they normally produce reports or articles, and I thank them for their consistent production of these articles. So, but other members are welcome to send in their article for publication. It helps us in a great way when it comes to outreach events. We distribute this at outreach events everywhere that we conduct outreach. And the copy is always available on the BC website, you know, for the public to download to know what we have been doing thus far. So in summary, it's a record of our activities over the quarterly period between ICANN meetings, it's a report. And then lastly, I'd like to talk about the community onboarding program. Though in AOB, mainly as the question will be provide some more information concerning this, well, the community onboarding program is a program that has evolved over time. In fact, it's usually an initiative of the BC. The number of the budget requests, even CROP, the initiative of the BC. This time around, we need to appoint a mentor and also a mentee, and the details are provided on the list for us to see. And ESCOM considered two expressions of interest to be BC mentors. And as a matter of fact, the executive committee made a unanimous decision concerning this, and the outputs or the results were communicated that Marilyn served as the mentor and Ariola served as the mentee. The BC ESCOM took this decision based on the BC Charter, section 2.6.3, indicating that the executive committee makes a nomination. Where we have multiple candidates, it could be thrown open for members to vote. But in this situation, all the nominees, but the second nominee actually withdrew and supported Marilyn, the nomination of Marilyn. So that made the composition unanimous decision. Now, I guess some of the questions or Maybe I want to throw in more information, more details about the program itself. Thank you very much. Over to you, Claudia, for now.
Thank you very much, Jimson. And since we have 10 minutes or so left, I know that Marilyn wanted to update the group, on a few items, including the Council Working Group on Internet Governance and the Council Working Group on Auction Proceeds. Marilyn, if you want to proceed.
Yes, thank you so much. It's Marilyn. I'm going to cover three items. One is I want to just call everyone's attention to the fact that the Cross-Community Working Group on Internet Governance is changing its charter and its standing. And I've been a member, several of the BC representatives on this call have been active. We will be moving from being a cross-community working group to a different status. So the new mechanism idea will be presented at the meeting in Puerto Rico. Final document, I will be sending it around and ask for everyone's comments. The point is to hear from the BC members on the importance of internet governance to ICANN and ICANN's reflection into internet governance. There is a board working group on internet governance now chaired by Matthew Shears, but it will have a slightly different status than a cross-community working group. So I'll just post that to your thinking and then ask you when we get more details to comment and give me and others from the BC who are active in that group advice. So, Claudia, I'll go to the second item now, if I might.
Of course.
The second item is the Cross-Community Working Group on Auction Proceeds. And, Steve, I will just ask that we update it, WADO, Maryland, TOLA as participants, and Lawrence's has moved to observer status. The official CSG representative is Andrew Harris, Tony Harris. Tony is not particularly active. In fact, I think all of us have more engagement than he does. We're making significant progress in that working group. There will be a face-to-face meeting on Sunday and then a 90-minute town hall on Thursday where we will report out. This is about examining four different options for distribution mechanisms. Two that would be tightly aligned to ICANN, and two that would be creating external foundation-like mechanisms with guidance on how the allocation of the funds is consistent with the ICANN mission. Everything is archived, it's transcribed. I'm happy to do more, but I think right now I just want to call your attention to it and let you know that you have four people from the BC paying attention to it, three as participants, and one as an observer, and to commend that to your attention. And then the final comment I will just make is the BC very successfully participated in the mentoring/onboarding pilot last year, and we're very privileged that we have the option to participate again this year. I thank everyone for supporting, nominating me as mentor, and also nominating Ariola as mentee. But we also had the opportunity to name Tola as a second mentee who doesn't have ICANN financial support, but can be a full participant in the onboarding project, participating remotely, and as funding is developed, can also participate in person. Thanks for the opportunity to report.
Thank you, Marilyn. Also, I know that a few members of the BC were present at the IGF this year that took place in Geneva. So I don't know if anyone has particular points to share with the group.
Hello, Claudia. This is Lawrence. My hand is up.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't see it. Please.
All right, thank you. So my intervention has to do with the onboarding program. Like we all will have noticed, I had sent out a mail based on the development, based on the announcement that was made in our last call. I'm still not satisfied with the process that we have engaged as the BC to fill the vacancies for mentor and mentee going forward in this current financial year. I believe that rather we had started, we were supposed to have done this a while back, and sometime in August, thereabouts, I'm sure the ESCOM also had to write to, also had to request for some information from the ICANN staff that were coordinating this program to get some direction. So I'm sure that at the end of the day, with the information that would have been available to ESCOM, we have a situation where our process clearly deviates from what is expected for this program. ICANN has different programs. The onboarding program, as it is, also expects that after a particular period, we will have the mentor on the program move so that we could have a mentee take that slot and then create room for another mentee to come on board. What we have done, what ESCOM has done for the BC, does not conform to this. And definitely, like I had said in the email I sent out, Marilyn is a good coach. She's been my mentor. But we have a program. I mean, what we have done is advance with what is expected for this program. I still expect the BC to reverse itself. Thank you.
Thank you, Lawrence. Marilyn, I see your hands up. Do you still want to comment or respond?
I would like to say something, please. This is Tola here for the record.
Please, Jinsom, go ahead.
Hey, this is Tola. Claudia. Tola raised interest in speaking, but maybe this could also clarify what maybe Tola meant to say. The details are there on the ICANN website. The call for mentor to be selected and mentee to be selected, the details are there, and we follow those details. So if there's any contrary information, we would like to see where it is published. ESCOM has been very transparent. We've been very collegial, and look at what will serve the best interest of BC. So the closing date for the nomination was December 15. The closing date was December 15, and as I said, we received nominations. And those nominations were considered by the ESCOM. Thank you.
Okay, can I say a few words, please?
Sure. Is it Lawrence?
No, this is Tola.
Sorry.
Okay. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to 2018 ICANN BC. As rightly cited by Jensen, I think I submitted a request. I requested for nomination. And in fairness, I want to understand what Lawrence is trying to explain, but unfortunately, understanding it need to go in line with the later rules and regulation. Like this, Jameson rightly put, an announcement was made on ICANN website, interested mentee and mentor should please apply to their SO or AC4 recommendation. So my thinking is, if indeed Lawrence was very strongly interested in this, there should have been an application. There should have been a request to the ESCOM for consideration. Now, at the point of deciding, we could now challenge the ESCOM to justify why they select between one or two persons. But unfortunately, if we have nomination from two different persons, one withdrew, and the other person that is available to ESCOM, I'm not sure ESCOM should be challenged on to why they decided on that singular person. I will say that anyway. The principle Lawrence established is valid. And I was privileged at Johannesburg, I can 59, to be at two different fora where similar issues were discussed. Two considerations that is very critical. Number one, why? What is the reason for onboarding being established? The reason is that same faces are being seen across ESOs and ACs over the years. And there is this feeling that if care is not taken, there is possibility of these same faces coming around being tired and they will fade away. There will be nobody to replace them. If that is the case, what is the best thing to do? Let us pilot a system where old names, old faces will start mentoring new faces. And along the line, the new faces will be prepared for leadership. That is the spirit behind onboarding. Now, the challenge is it possible for a mentee to learn what a senior mentor has acquired over the course of 10, 15, 20 years in 1 year? It's almost impossible. So, whereas it is important to bring aboard new faces, I don't think it is proper to conclude that within just 1 year. In that case, it means a mentee may need to go through a year or two to perfect learning process. And that was the spirit behind my nominating, in the first instance, a mentor, an assistant mentor, who has been through it in 1 year and will likely take another 1 year to perfect the learning process. So we need to balance the two in this instance. Do we say old faces should go away just within 1 year? It is almost impossible because the new faces may not conclude learning in 1 year. And that's the submission I want to make. That's the intervention I want to make. I wouldn't say Lawrence is 100% wrong, and I wouldn't say the process we have carried out is 100% correct. So we just need to find a balance in between the two. Next time, if Lawrence is interested, I would advise kindly apply before the closing date of December 15th. Thank you for your attention.
Sorry, if there's some time, I'd like to respond to this, Claudia.
Sure. Please go ahead.
Sorry to belabor this issue on today's call, but I think it's good to crash this out. Now, there is something that I think we actually have not gotten grasps of. To be a mentor, first of all, yes, there was this call where we were instructed to go to our SOs or the ACs, you know, to be renominated. And so at this point, two things stand out. While naturally you might be required to respond to a call for a mentee, there were two mentors on this program. And the way ICANN has designed it is that when the prime mentor leaves, so to say, we've seen this happen with the CCNSO, we've seen this happen in three or four other constituencies, the person who becomes the mentor for that constituency is a sitting mentee. So for the BC to make a choice, which is the argument I am anchoring on at the moment, is that we had two sitting mentees on the program who were the ones eligible to become mentors. And based on that, the BC, in its call or in its choice in the process, should have focused on these two. Now, what you have done definitely is sending a message to myself, I don't know about my colleague, that it means that the BC does not have enough trust in us to become mentors. That is why both of us were not considered for that role. Now, this it's a plain process. It's something that has been ongoing. We were supposed to do this as far back as the Abu Dhabi meeting, but because we had our internal issues to be worked out, the BC was given that preference. And so for the BC to now have to go this full hog, and at the end of the day, in a system where you are to have a mentor move on and have a mentee become a mentor, you're now having the mentor sit and you have both mentees pull out, which is the reason why the onboarding program itself was created, because these are the kinds of things that the community had been complaining about and saying that should in some way or the other be addressed.
Okay, thank you very much, Lawrence. I see Marilyn, your hand is up. If you have, if you can respond in very, very shortly, and then maybe we can take the issue offline. Please, Marilyn, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Marilyn. I understand that communications can be confusing, but in fact, the call for nominations was public, and to his credit, wrote a very detailed contribution, posted it, shared it with the BC, made a recommendation of a mentor and an assistant mentor and two mentees that was public to all of the BC, available to them to comment on. And subsequently, I also indicated my interest in continuing as a mentor and verified with the ICANN staff that if the support comes from the organization, so just to comment here, Lawrence is correct that the nominations for mentee and mentor need to come from the executive committee of each of the organizations. And to my understanding, that nomination has been confirmed for one mentor, myself, one funded mentee, but an assistant, a second seat, and that is TOLA, in the event that funding becomes available, that you have full access to the onboarding activities that will take place remotely and when possible when funding exists. Now, I understand that people can be disappointed that they are not included, but in fact, there was no rule that a former mentor from the pilot program could not be continued. And I did verify that with the ICANN senior staff.
Okay, thank you for the clarification. I have to admit I'm not aware of all the background, so it's difficult for me also to judge or give any type of input. But maybe, Lawrence, if there are further questions and also from other people on the call, maybe we can take this offline because I see that the time is running out. So we can eventually, Marilyn, I guess you are available also to provide further details if needed. Or any of the XCOM maybe that can also help here. If there are no further points, then maybe I'll just would close the call. And the next meeting is on Thursday, 18th of January, and we'll speak then. So thank you very much for participating and have a great afternoon, evening.